Now, I guess you all survived Irma, or you wouldn't be here today. I don't mean this, but have anybody heard? And I have not heard. Has anybody heard the death toll because of Irma? Has anybody heard that last number? What's the last number anybody has heard? 12. I knew it was less than 20. I didn't know if that had creeped up, and I knew that there was one or two that had passed away on the evacuations from nursing homes or hospitals and stuff that I heard about. But this hurricane was huge, okay? It involved hundreds of thousands of people. And this hurricane, it could have been worse, okay? Not just worse because of the damage it did. Now, let me tell you, the damage it did is just damage. I mean, it's just done some terrible things down there. But to only have the loss of 12 lives on something that was this magnitude and scale is almost beyond imagination. And what it comes from is planning. Now, if you looked at the last week prior to all of these things happening, they were forecasting what was going to happen, and it allowed people to make plans and get prepared. How many of you did some preparation before the hurricane got here? Did anybody do that? Okay. I did some plans. I went and taped all the cracks of my windows because I didn't want water to blow under my windows because I just got new floors and I hadn't seen them that often. I didn't want to be wet when I got back. So I taped up all the outside, just put some duct tape on it. But let me tell you, when we stayed in the shelter, there were several of us that stayed in the shelter. And let me tell you, go back to the other part. Your generosity and your offering, your giving allowed us to buy food and supplies. And we had about 40 people at Pittman Park in the shelter to help them out through this difficult time of weathering out the storm. My wife and I were one of those, and some other couples here, and people that weren't even a part of this church. This was the safe haven that they had. Now, we would have put it here in our physical building. However, we don't have the restroom facilities, and we have too many pine trees at the back. We were concerned they could fall on us. So that church was more secure. We got permission from that pastor and that congregation to allow us to host that, and we hosted that. Your church, your offerings, your tithes helped host that and allowed up to, I think it was about 40. There were so many little ones running around, I couldn't tell. You understand? Because when the lights went out, all I heard was kids running. And me and Chewy, we are different type of animals when it comes to a tremendous storm, because we just went back to bed. When the power went out at 8 o'clock in the morning, I just laid back down on my little cot or on my little sleeping bag, and I was out, you know. And so, but my point is, that's your generosity. Your offerings to the church helped us to be the church at a time that the church was needed, even before FEMA could get here as well. But we talked about how you have to plan for those things. Now, many of you may have got a call from us from our calling tree. It's a new thing. We've never done it before until this last, that we sort of threw it together in 48 hours. But one of the things that was on my heart was, you know, I'm going to call and check on my family. You understand? In a situation like that, an event like that, I'm going to call and check on my family. So I'm going to call my children. I'm going to call my mom if they're in the path of this destruction. And I'm going to call and check on them. And I thought, well, if church is a family, shouldn't we call our church family? Shouldn't we call the people who are a part of our congregation? So we tried to take the information that came from your connection cards, and you have them there in your message notes now that you could tear off, that we tried to call people just to say, before the storm, are you staying or are you going? So we'll know who to look for. Because I don't want to be looking for you if a building falls and you're living that building and I'm looking for you and you're over in Albany, Georgia. You know, I don't want to do that. So my point was, and so we did this. Now, if you were not on that calling tree, please, and if you would like to, please put your name and number down on your connection cards and put a note, add me to the tree. And we have different tiers where I'll call the first 8 or 10 people, and then some of them will call the next ones and so forth and so on until we try to get a hold of everybody. Because I don't want anybody to not feel like that they're alone. I don't want them to feel alone and nobody's looking for them. Okay, in a situation like or something happens. And this could be for not just a hurricane, for any type of disaster or whatever. But planning ahead. Last week, we had one joint service, and we had a service, and there was four things that I brought out in that service: that we need to think and plan ahead, that we need to get wise advice, that we need to plan carefully and deliberately, meaning not in haste. I packed up my car with a generator. I had some saws and some tools, and I didn't do it in haste because I did it ahead of time. Had all of it laid out where I could think. You understand? It's hard to think what to go get in your house when a tree falls on your house. You understand? But when you have time, you can prepare for those things. And so I got all those materials, put in my car. Some of my kids were making fun of me, going, you know, Daddy, you just worry about this, that, and the other, and why are you putting that all in your car? You can just drive back home to get it. I'm like, you can't drive back home if the roads are blocked by trees. I can't go get my chainsaw. I need my chainsaw, so I want that with me wherever I was. So we plan. I was deliberately. I didn't do it in haste. And finally, we submit and commit our plans to God and His glory. Now, here's the thing that I want to talk about. We are in a message series where we're talking about people's finances, about your finances and my finances. Now, many of us have been taught, you just don't talk about your personal stuff. You don't talk about your finances. And I'm not talking in a bragging or in a poor mouth, is what I was taught the phrase is, a poor mouth type of way. You know, it's worse than what it is. You understand? But what we're trying to do is help you reach not just financial goals, but godly financial goals and dreams that God has placed on your heart and what you should be doing. And so there's several categories, and I want you to take your pen. How many of you got your message notes? Pull out your message notes. You're going to need those. And I want you to write down the four words I'm about to put on the board right here. Okay? The first one is tithe. T-I-T-H-E. The second one is save. The next one is generosity. And the third one, or fourth one, is live on. So write that down on your message notes. Everybody write that down from each family. Write that down. Tithe, save, generosity, and live on. Now here's what I want to explain to you. First of all, tithe. Tithe is a biblical principle that says that we give 10% of what we make or what we earn, and we give it back to the Lord. It comes from the Old Testament, from part when God had determined, and this was during the Exodus, He gave them the laws and decrees and things like that, that you were to give a tenth of what you made. And at that time, it wasn't necessarily money. It might have been fruit, your harvest, your livestock, or whatever. You gave 10% to the upkeep of the temple. Well, we don't have a temple, we call it a church now. So it basically helped cover the funding of the operations of the church. It covered the people who cleaned the carpet or done whatever that wasn't done with volunteers. It covered the pastors or the priests. At that time, they were called Levites, so that they could just solely function in doing the ministry of the church. That's their full-time profession, but it came through the offerings. Does everybody understand that? And in order to have the amount that God felt, not just to pay the pastors or pay the priest, but to take care of all his stuff and to do the things that needed to be done. Back in that day, they used to have a lot of sacrifices, so they had to have a firewood pile to do the sacrifice. They had to have somebody to have the bowls, and they just don't, you know, so all of the things that were involved with the various things that was part of that worship, part of that culture, part of that tradition, that's where that concept comes from, and that's what the concept is that we use today, is a tithe. The amount is 10%. What's that amount? Tell it to me. 10%. So 10%. I just gave that answer away to you now, and I'm not going to tell you the rest of them now, okay, because they're your answers. Now, the next one is save. Scriptures tell us throughout the scriptures, and especially the books of wisdom tell us, it's important to save and look to the future. It's important to have a little bit put back. It's not that you just, you can live on the day and trust God, but He still wants you to put some provisions back to cover. This actually happens especially on the sixth day. Because on the sixth day, God said that through the Exodus story, and it's a story in the Bible that I'm going to relate to in a little bit, is that when the seventh day, you're supposed to rest. It's supposed to be a Sabbath. And so you do your work on the sixth day, and you save up. You have your food cooked. You have your stuff prepared on the sixth day. And on the seventh day, you don't have to do that. So you have to save something to have it roll over to the next day. Does everybody understand that? So it's a principle in the Bible. The next one is generosity. Generosity is different than tithing. Tithing is what you do to help support the church and let the church do the ministry. For instance, you gave money to the offerings over the weeks and months, and I took that money and went to Augusta and bought bread and peanut butter and stuff like that at the Kroger up there because they wouldn't any bread down here, and then I came back and we distributed out as needed. Now, generosity is when you help someone yourself. When you're generous to help someone or some situation. You don't, right now, some of us are not financially in a position to help somebody, or it feels like we're not in a financial position to help somebody. So what we do is we send them to an agency to get help, or tell them to call the preacher. Or call, you understand, now when we do that, we send them somewhere and let the agencies or some other thing take care. But what would happen if you could help somebody? What would happen if you were able to help somebody to pay for their medication for 1 month because they couldn't? Maybe they're a diabetic and couldn't afford their insulin. And maybe you, they come to you with that issue, somebody that works with you, somebody that you're around, and they need something at that point, and you just don't have the resources. And rather than send it, what if you were to able to have the resources and could help somebody and could be generous or help somebody out with a meal or something like that, or help somebody in need when it comes before you and you recognize it? And then the last one is live on. That's what is left. If you put these other three things together, your tithe, your savings, and your generosity, then everything else that remains is what you have to live on. So what I want you to do right now, I'm going to play a little game. I want you to write down not what you're actually doing, okay, in that area. Because for some of us, it'd be embarrassing to write it down because somebody might look over on our page and see what we write down. Okay? But here's what I want you to do. You're going to put down two numbers. The first number is, for each of those categories, what number you would like to be at 1 year from now, percentage. Okay? Now, forget the 10%. I mean, don't forget the 10%, but where would you like to be 1 year from now in your giving to the church? Where would you like to be 1 year from now in your savings, you investing into your savings? What percentage of your income would you like to put toward generosity? And if you take those three and add them up together, what's left is what you'd have to live on. So first column, write that down. What you'd like to do in 1 year. And I'll give you a heads up. The second column, put the same thing down. What you would like to be in 5 years. Okay? First column is 1 year. Second column is 5 years. Okay? And if you're a household, you can do this for a household. It doesn't have to be just yours. It could be just, the two of you. So what percentage would you like to give toward the church or the tithe? What would you like to save? What would you like to be generous with? And what would you like to live on? Okay? Now, if you're at zero in any of those categories, zero on tithing, zero on savings, zero on generosity, maybe your first step is just to do something in this next year. What would I like to do? Just something. Want some percentage, a half a percent, a 0.25%. And then again, where would you like to be in 5 years? Where would you like to be? Don't worry about how big it seems. Just put those numbers down. Everybody raise your hand when you get the numbers written down. Unless you got a brand new baby that's only like a week old, and don't raise your hand at all. You're good. Babies everywhere right here. I'm loving it. So, all right, good. That's good. All right, so here, I'm going to give you one of my numbers. Okay? Here's my number. My 1 year number is 10% on tithing. Okay? That's my 1 year number. I'd like to be able to save 10%. I'd like to be able to give generously 5%, which leaves me with how much? 75%. And my 5-year is I'd like to be able to tithe 11% because I want to go above. You understand? That's just the type of guy I am. I overeat. I'm over on everything. You understand? I just want to go over on stuff. So I want to go over the tithe. So I want to do 11% in 5 years. I want to do 11% in savings. Not much. I'm not going because I'm thinking, man, the 10 is going to stretch me. But I'm being honest. And I'd like to be able to go on 10% generosity. Now, if I do those things, what's left to live on? 68% of what I make. But see, I know I'm going to retire sometime and I ain't going to be making nothing. So I'm counting on some of that savings to come in to help me do some of this. Does everybody got your numbers? Okay. So here's my question. What stops you from doing the things necessary to meet your 1-year goal right now? The bills that you created before this year. Anybody else like that? What keeps you from doing this 5 years from now? The bills that I created before this. You understand? Those? How many of y'all got student loans? Anybody here got student loans? How many is paying student loans? Okay, let me give you some numbers. Here's the deal. The thing that stops all of us from doing these things, I believe, and I believe it is a slave master. I believe we are enslaved to it, is debt. I believe debt is like a set of chains put on a slave to keep them where they are, to keep them in their spot. This is what debt is to me. Debt has had me enslaved to where I couldn't be generous when I wanted to be generous. I couldn't put stuff back in the savings. I couldn't because I owed everybody. What's that song go? I owe, it's off to work I go. You know, because I owe, that's why I do it, you know. Oh, it's hi-ho. I'm sorry. I mean, that's the way I sing it. But So my point is, if debt stops us, let me tell you a few things about debt from statistics I've looked up. Number one, the debt for the average household. Now, I don't know if the average household is 2.1 people or five people, but for the average household, just let these numbers sort of roll with you. Consumer credit card debt is $16,883 a year, the average amount they have. Almost $17,000 in credit card debt. That's Belk's, that's Lowe's, that's Visa, that's who else? That's y'all know these credit cards. Anybody else have these cards? Or I mean, everybody's, yeah, Home Depot. I hit the jackpot today, right? We know about that, right? $17,000 is what people average. Now, if you're below that, then understand there's people above you that, like, if you don't owe that much, there's somebody that does owe that much to make that be the average. Does everybody understand that? So if you only owe, like, $10,000, somebody owes $22,000 to make up for that. That's about people are carrying. Yes. It just says the average household consumer credit card has that much right now. Yes. Listen to the rest of the numbers. That's households, yes, sir, in the United States. Auto loans. That's a separate one. Woohoo, car payments, right? And some of us got more than one, right? The average amount for car loans for a household, so if you've got two cars, three cars, four cars, whatever you got, is $29,500. Almost $30,000 people owe for vehicles. Here's your next one. Where's my college students? Let me see their hands. All right, okay, here we go. Student loans. For those people who have households who have students, you know, who have student loans or who have come out of those, $50,600. Almost $51,000 is now on the shoulders of a group of people for however long it takes them to pay back for student loans. That's the rest of their life. That's what some of them are saying, right? Lindsay, how long have you been out of school? Can I use you as an example? Yeah. How long have you been out?
The second
Okay. She wasn't doing remedial stuff. She went to a master's program. I'm just going to say that. So, 3 years from the second time and 7 years from the first time or whatever. How much, I mean, not how much you owe. Are you still paying?
Yeah.
Do you have? Yeah. Does this number seem real to you? That's a low number. You trade yours right now for that. So see, she's one. All right, so here's the other. This blew me away. Other type of debt. Not a house. Other type of debt. When you add it up, this would be for your business if you've got business loans. This would be if you got a boat. This would be if you have a second home or something. You understand? Other type of loans, debt, a personal note. Get this number. $136,000. People got their businesses are running off of loans. You got that? $136,000. Here's the mortgage one. $182,000. Now, there's not many houses in Statesboro that's $182,000. There's some in there, but you got to understand, somebody up there in New York and other places or California, they're paying a whole lot more because I watch them. You watch them on that home network, and they go in there and say, ooh, this nice little, you know, 1,800 square foot house in California for $1.2 million. I'm like, are you out of your mind? But do you understand? But this is the average. I want to go back to the credit card one. You realize at that rate, $17,000 about, that at the average interest rate, people are paying $1,200, almost $1,300 in interest to somebody to have that use of that money. Now what, see that's slavery. We can't do anything. We can't breathe. And you know what we've done is we've got a mentality of, well, there's no way we can do this without debt. In fact, we teach in schools, you need to get a credit card and you need to charge something on it so that you can establish your what?
Credit.
Have you heard that before? Because it's like cash is not good enough. Let me tell you, if the power goes out from that hurricane, cash is king. It ain't gonna be credit cards anymore. You understand what I'm saying? My point is that we've been brainwashed, if you will, by a large group of things that says you can't do this without having this, and that meaning debt. Everyone has debt. It's the mentality. But the people who are usually saying that are the people who are making money off of those of us in debt. Well, what happens if we could get rid of that? See, what happens? Just to think about in your life. What would happen if you had zero debt? Just let that soak a minute. Now, I don't want you to plan your first vacation right now. Don't do that. If you had zero debt, I don't want you to quit work either. Okay? If you had zero debt, do you think that you could tithe or would you tithe? Okay? Okay, do you think that you would save more money? Do you think you'd be more generous with what you do have? Now, we think we would do that. We think that if I just had the freedom from this slave master that's held me in bondage for this long, what my life could be like. Let me tell you something here. 250 million U.S. citizens claim to be Christians. 250 million. Only 99 million of them even go to church. Not even half of them go to church, but they claim to be Christian. But get this, only 1.5 million tithe. That is 0.6% tithe. So what's causing us from not doing it? Is it the debt? In fact, The research has shown that Christians gave greater per capita during the Great Depression than they do now when there's no depression. People gave to the church in the Depression when people today can't. So what? When I'm doing this research, and I'm not a researcher, I'm just going, what changed? Credit. Since the Great Depression, there's been an influx of everybody getting credit cards, everybody getting debt. You get pre-approved when you're 12 years old. They start sending you stuff in the mail. Just get it. I don't know how you get $1,000 credit and you're 12 years old. I still haven't figured that out. Some of you got credit cards when you was 8 years old and they pre-approved you. Now, if there's any bankers in here, I won't hear your marketing strategy. That's not what I'm about. See, I think that being a slave to financial turmoil and to debt does not honor God. I don't believe that's biblical. I don't believe to be in debt honors God. I really don't. I don't think sin honors God, but I'm still a sinner. But I'm trying and making plans and making attempts to get better, to reduce the effects or to reduce the sin in my life. Are you doing that? Is that not what Christ compels us to do? And you do that through discipline. You do it through planning. You do it through discipline. You do it through having a plan, making a plan, something that would honor God. So here's what I want to talk to you about today. When the Israelites were coming out of captivity, from 400 years of being enslaved by the Egyptians, that's almost 200 years more in time than we've been free in the country we live in now. Now, just understand that. We've been free. We left from all the persecution of religion to come to the United States and create what is called the United States now, right? 200 and some years ago of freedom. This group of people had been enslaved for almost twice that amount. And God comes and through miraculous events, miraculous things, deliver them out of slavery. They're physically out of Egypt, but guess what? Egypt, or the slave master, was still inside of them. And what was happening was on the trip out, they complained about this, they complained about that. We don't have food. And God provided because He wanted them to be free. He wanted them to move all the way to this place called the Promised Land. Look at your columns again. Everybody look at your columns that you got. First column, you see your first column? Now look at your second column that was where you want to be in 5 years. That's your Promised Land. And He gave them instructions of how do you get to the Promised Land. This is what you're going to have to do, and I'm going to help you along the way, but you have to help yourself. You have to want to change. And so God, through series of events, He provided manna. Manna was this, it was like dew on the ground in the morning, and it wouldn't be there at night, but it'd be there in the morning. They'd make bread out of it. It never existed. Something He created that never existed up to known history of mankind to that point, He created to help them on this journey. Thousands of Israelites every night, quail would fly in. It would be like the love bugs around here recently. You just ride around and quails hit you. Well, we got quail for supper tonight. I mean, they're all over the front of your car. They would hit their camels and knock them down. You know, I mean, it's just, I'm thinking about, that's what it would look like. You know how they swarm up? It's just quail every night. And they complained about that. They said at one time, said, did you just bring us out here to die in the desert because there wasn't enough graves in Egypt? See, they were out and free, but they had to learn how to live free. They had to take steps to get into the Promised Land. He gave them instructions of what you're going to need to do. And there's the stuff I'm going to talk to you about today is this instruction was what you needed to help you on the way to set you up when you get debt-free or when you get in the Promised Land. Because we all say we could do these things and be more generous and tithe and all this, but if you don't discipline yourself, then you'll start pocketing that money or go on another trip. Or you'll listen to all the commercials that say you can do this and use just the only $99.95 a month. You know, it's not about how much it is. It's about how much you can make a payment on. See, that's how we've been wired, and it's unwiring that. So here's the thing. At one point in Exodus, Moses, who was leading the people, his father-in-law, Jethro, told him this one time because he was having some issues. It was just so much work for him to do. It was just a huge amount. Jethro told him, he said, you need to get some help. He said, teach them his decrees. So teach them God's decrees and his instructions and show them the way that they are to live and how they are to behave. You need to get some help or you're going to burn yourself out. So when's the church ever going to step up and help people? When's the church? We have emergency evacuees that he's talking about that Eric did in the offering prep that we helped and we're willing. What about, let's figure out this debt thing. What about if we were to attack it as a church, as individuals, as families, as a congregation and say, let's stop this. Let's stop the wheel from turning this away. Stop it and let's push this thing back the other way. What could we do? What could you change? What could happen in the world because of your efforts? So they were talking, and Moses and I, and over yesterday in prepping for this, I listened to all, and I when I work out in the yard, I listen on the headphones to stuff. So I listened to all of Genesis and all of Deuteronomy yesterday. That's how long I was working in the yard, and four chapters from another book. So it was all day working outside. And so I just don't think when I'm doing it. You know, Jody called one time. She said, you're panting. You're out of breath. And it's because I don't realize how fast I'm mowing because I'm thinking. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and I'm push mowing, so I'm not riding mowing. So here is a story out of that. Moses goes up and he gets the commandments from God. And it wasn't just 10. He got a slew. They put 10 on stone tablets, but he got a slew of them. Some of them they called commandments, some of them called laws, and some of them they called decrees. But he gave them instructions. He actually had a book of instructions, not just the tablets of 10 commandments. He had a book of instructions that he had to help people learn to live to be free. And at the top of the list was this thing about God. And when you hear this, when I hear this about him teaching the people how to love God and love others, it's the most primary thing. So I said, what if we take those principles from this little snippet and we use them in our lives about our finances? So here's what it says. In Deuteronomy 6, verses 1 through 9, it says, these are the commands and decrees and laws the Lord your God directed me, this is Moses talking, to teach you to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you and your children and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, so that you may enjoy a long life. So he's saying, here's the decrees and things I'm telling you about how it's going to live, what you're going to have to do to live free. But understand, to get from here to there, you got to go through some stuff. But you need to know what it's going to take to live free, to stay free, to get this point and love God here. You're going to have to practice it all the way to get there. You with me? So that when you get there, you got it. When you get to the promised land, you got it. So it's not about if we're going to get to the promised land. It's about how we're going to behave when we get there. So we start practicing it before we get there. It's not about you saying that dream is so far and so big, that five-year goal of my savings or my giving or my tithing or my generosity or all that. It's not that that's so big. What it is you have to learn how to live getting there so you'll know how to live when you get there. So he says, and it says so you can enjoy your life. Sort of gives you the indication you can get over there, but then not enjoy it when you get there. He says, hear Israel and be careful to obey so that it may go well with you and that you may increase greatly in the land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, promised. It's a promise. He wants us to be free from all bondage. He doesn't want us to have idols called Visa or MasterCard or home equity loans. He doesn't want us to have those idols that we think that we need to have to live. He wants us to be free, but you're going to have to obey his teaching. So here's what he said. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. So there's one God. That's our God. He is the God. They don't get no better than that. He's it. He is the old Milwaukee moment. That's a terrible analogy, but he is. It doesn't get any better than this. That's him. God is God. There don't be looking for something else that's better. This is God. and He's one. And He's your God. He's your God. This is your God for you. He says, love the Lord your God with all your, somebody help me with that, with all your what? Heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength. Where does that start with? Heart. It's a heart thing. It's a life thing is your soul, and then your actions are your strength, but it starts with your heart. These commands I give you today are to be on your hearts. Why did He say that? Because it starts with your heart thing. You've got to understand that loving God starts with your heart. It's a heart thing, and it drives your soul. It drives your action. And if that's the part that He's calling you to do about your finances, to get your finances ordered, to get out of debt, then it's a heart thing. You've got to have the Holy Spirit moving in you to say, it's time to stop this. It's time to correct this. It's not tomorrow, the next day. It starts today. It doesn't matter how big you think this obstacle is. It starts today. He continues. Impress them on your children. This is a generational thing. See, some children have been taught that debt's okay. Unfortunately, my children have been taught that debt's okay because in my time, debt was okay. Now I'm trying to change myself, and I got to go back and help change my children. You with me? Some of us have been taught by our parents, just go ahead and borrow it. It's just about how much you can pay. And they tell you the wise things to do to save interest. Well, just borrow. Remember, anybody ever played this game? I did this in my younger years. We borrow from this credit card to pay this credit card because this one is more interest than that one. So we you know, did anybody ever do that before? And then I borrow from that. And then some months, because I can't make the payments on what I have, I go ahead and borrow money from this credit card to make the payment on that credit card. You understand the cycle? And you know what they do? They got me. And they drag me over there by the chain. And I can't get away. Because I think I got to be like you. I got to have what you have. And I got to live like you. I got to wear the clothes like you can. And I can't live within my own means. I live within my means. See, my mind is, I can spend not what I make, but I can spend what I'm credit worthy for. So I'm not living within my means. I'm living within what the bank says that I can spend, which is the very ones who are making money off of me, aren't they? It sounds like I'm slamming the banks, but I'm not, because they need it for some times. I can remember having times, we're going to have a credit card for our emergency fund. Anybody ever had that? And then the emergency fund turned out to be from a car wrecking or a tire, flat tire, to being, well, we need these clothes or the kids need this, and then there it goes. He said, impress them on your children. Talk about them. See, here's what it is. You got to talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk on the road. We don't talk about this. This is the elephant in the room. And for some of us, the elephant sits on our chest that debt is so great we can't even function in life. We have to work on the Sabbath. We have to work on the Sabbath because our slave master makes us pay, so we got to work on the Sabbath. We can't take a Sabbath, right? The pressures, you can't sleep. You got to take medicine because the debts are so much. How many arguments has ever happened in a household over finances? None of y'all's houses. I know it's just ours. So I just don't listen to what Jody tells me to do. As soon as I do that, we're okay. But do you understand the tension that's caused between parents and children? It's the debt is terrible. Well, I can't dream about what the promise are. It's so hard to dream about tithing. It's so hard to dream about savings. It's so hard to dream about the generosity because I'm living in the reality of this elephant of debt is sitting on my chest and I can't even take a breath. And I don't know which way to move. And maybe this isn't you. Maybe it's just me. But he said you got to talk about it when you sit at home. So that means in the house. You got to talk about it as a family. You in that household, when Blair was asking that, it's the household. You got to talk about it. You got to have a plan as a household, whether your household is one, whether your household is two, whether your household is three, four, five, six. I don't care if you're married or not married. Your household is your household. If your mama and your grandma and your cousin's uncle is staying in your house, that's your household. You got to talk about that. You don't think so? Let them all move in your house. And they turn the air conditioning down. And you the one paying the bills. There'll be a talk coming up then, won't they? Because you go, you doggone right, you go turn that thing up. You pay the bills, you stay. Did anybody have that conversation? Okay, I don't know. Talk about them when you sit at home. And when you walk on the road, it's like this isn't just something you talk about at home. You got to take it out with you when you go. That means when you talk about it on the road, it's when you go to the restaurant. When you go to the store and you go to want to buy something, you got to have that conversation in the line. But you need to have that conversation before you go in the store. Walking, if you're going to the grocery store, that's the time to go and talk about what's our plan, what's our list. Because I'm telling you, if you send old Dorsey to go get stuff, and I'm hungry, man, that basket's getting full. And it's getting stuff. And see, I'm not, see, the people, listen, somebody else got to help go get stuff for the shelter the next time if we have to do an emergency shelter. Because, man, I bought Little Debbie cakes like they were going, I thought they would, the Little Debbie plant was going to get tore down. I was like, we better buy some of these. Let's get about 20 of them. Everybody needs little Nutty Buddies and Swiss rolls and all that. I was like, man, I was throwing them in there. And I'm like, that probably wasn't the healthiest thing to get. So, I mean, anyway. When you lie down and when you get up, talk about them as the last thing you do before you go to bed. Talk about them as your first thing that you get up, right? You're talking about this stuff that's on your mind. And guess what? If you're talking about it or thinking about it before you go to bed and you're talking about it and thinking about it before you get up or when you get up, what happens between those? Sleep. And maybe dreams. Maybe you'll start dreaming again and not have nightmares. Maybe you won't have those nightmares about drowning and can't breathe and being suffocated. Maybe start to have dreams about what it's like when I get to this point and dreaming about the promised land. Maybe that's what it's about. He goes on and says, tie them as symbols. And remember, he's talking about love the Lord your God. This is how you have to do. These are the things you have to do to love God. You have to remind yourself, well, if it's about loving God, then to honor and serve God with what I have, then maybe I need to do these same things. These same guidelines will apply to this. That's why I'm applying this. Tie them as symbols on your hands. See, I wear these bracelets, and they remind me of something, each one of them. Because I can't do anything without seeing them, right? In my wallet, I used to have notes. You can't serve God and money. Put a little sticker on it. We gave them out, I think. We gave them out in church, didn't we? I carried that for a long time. We gave them out in church, can't serve God and money. Put a sticker on it, told everybody put it in their billfold. That was the first dollar they spent. Put reminders in front of you about what you're doing. That's what a grocery list for. That's what, when you go to the store, I'm not going to spend more than this on a car. I'm not going to spend more than this on, you tracking with me? Put it out there in front of you. Tie it on your hands. Bind them on your forehead. Well, I tell you one thing, I don't see my forehead. Can anybody here right now see your forehead, your own forehead? You might see your eyebrows if you got some bushy ones, but you can't see your forehead unless you look in a mirror or something, right? Which means when you put it on your forehead, others know. You go to the restaurant and you go get something like, Dorsey, don't you always, I go up and I order like my salad or maybe a hamburger. Could be a salad, but probably a hamburger. And then they want to supersize that. And not only do I say I don't want to supersize it, I say I'll take water. And it's not because I'm a health nut, but it may be because I'm trying to save that $2 for a drink. And that $2 for a drink that I save, I might have a plan to do that five times that week. That's $10. I'm going to put it in the offering plate. Or I'm going to put two of it in the offering, two of it in savings, and one of it I'm going to put over here to give somebody else and be generous with. And when I do that, somebody sees me in line like, Dorsey, you on a diet? No. It's tied on my head. I'm doing this because of what God is leading me to do. Now I'm held accountable. Now I got people helping me. See, it's in my house and out of my house. It's in front of my hands. It goes on, it says, write them on the door frames of your house and on your gates. And I'm thinking, why put it on your house? And why put it on your gates? If it's your house, it's your house. It's to remind you what you're living in. Don't go in there before you realize how you get all this. Don't realize that God is the God of the universe and He can do anything, even get you to the promised land. By the way, they didn't live in houses. When this was written, they didn't live in houses or have gates. They were in tents. You tracking with me? He's like, you are in the process of moving to here, but I'm talking to you about what I want you to do when you get there. When you get there, you're still going to have to remember. You need to put it on your house that you now own, debt-free. You need to put it on the gates of the land that you have that you don't owe any money for. You need to put it on there to remind you who I am, what I've done, all because you love me and you've been obedient to me and you followed my ways. Look at your list again. Look at 1 year. And look at your 5 year. Are they still huge? I want to show you something. When I was little, I got Domino's. Anybody get Domino's when they was little? Now, I was so little, it's like I didn't read the instructions. Anybody ever get those black and white Domino's? I didn't even know the little dots on them were, what do they call, pips. I thought they were dots. Maybe they are dots, but they're called pips. So you count your pips, and there's when you play, I went to Jamaica. That's how I learned to play dominoes, because they play that stuff. Boy, I mean, they smacking them bones down. Rattle those bones, and they play them, and you add them up, and the outside numbers come up to 5, 10, 15. Anybody ever played? That's how you sort of keep the score one way. They smacking them bones down and all. But you know how, during the storm, at our household, we played Mexican train. Anybody know how to play a bit? But Mexican train, we just playing games, we play card games. But you know how, when I was little, how I played with dominoes? It was more like this. Anybody ever do that where you just sort of sit them down there and you'd see them on TV and some magician would do this? Oh, I can't even do it. Isn't that hard? But you'd set them up like that. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? And you set 4 or 5 of them up, or 10. If you were really good, you could set. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Everybody see? You know, you see. And then what you did? What did you do? We used to do different things. We'd shoot marbles at them to see who could get it to fall. You know, but you'd push that one, right? And you just push that one, and what happens? Did y'all play with them like that? Did anybody else play with them like that? Now, when I did that, when I was growing up, I knew that was the domino effect, right? The domino effect, if you hit one domino, it knocks another domino down, all that stuff. It's a chain reaction. But here, let me explain something to you. Did you realize what's this guy's name? Loren Whitehead, in 1983, wrote a paper in the American Journal of Physics. And he talked not only about the domino effect of one hitting another, but he talked about something more. Chris, can you show this video? And this guy's going to give you a demonstration of not just the chain reaction, but the domino effect.
Everybody knows about playing with dominoes, but what you may not know is that a domino can knock over another domino, which is about 1.5 times larger. So what I have here is a chain of dominoes. Each one is 1.5 times larger than the previous one. And the smallest domino is about 5 millimeters high and 1 millimeter thick. And I will carefully place it. And there are 13 dominoes. And the largest domino, it weighs about 100 pounds and is more than a meter tall. Ready? Boom. That was 13 dominoes. If I had 29 dominoes, the last domino would be as tall as the tallest.
So, you see, it knocks down 1.5 times its size, right? Not just, does anybody know why it knocks over 1.5 times its size when it stands vertical? Who's physics majors? Come on. Momentum? What gives it momentum? Did you say inertia? No, what? Centrifugal force. That's circular. That's close. Speed. What keeps you from floating off into the atmosphere? Gravity. This is potential energy. When you have it flat, it's not potential. When you stand it vertical, it has potential energy. That potential energy comes because of the force put on it called gravity. When gravity hits that amount, it gives it the force of 1.5 times its size. You got it? God is the gravity in our life. It is a law, it is a principle that you do this, I'll do my part. You do your part, I'll do my part. It knocks over 1.5 times its size. That was 13 right there. Do you know what happens if you continue that effect? Not just 13 times, put a bigger one, 1.5 times, 14, 15. Do you realize what happens at 23 domino types? It will knock over the Eiffel Tower. The Eiffel Tower. That's how high the building would be. Do you know what happens at 28 dominoes? It will knock over the Empire State Building. 28 dominoes from the size that he did right there. One hitting the other. It's not because of what they do, though it is about what they do. It's about the combination of what they do with that gravitation, that force, that God-created force that can knock over the Empire State Building. So as the band comes forward to lead us in our last song, look at your list again. Which one of those items to you look like the Empire State Building? Is it in the one-year list? Is it in your five-year list? Which one looks like it can't be accomplished? You cannot knock over this one. It's too big. I'm not asking you to start there. I'm asking you to start with that little one you have to hold by a tweezer and push it up against another one. I'm asking you to plan what the next one is. It will knock over. You understand what a plan is? A plan is in front of you. So you put one down, but you put this one. Here's the start. And before that one goes, what do? Put another one down. You understand what I'm saying? And you keep adding on to it. But after so many times, you will knock down that tower. My son is trying to quit smoking right now. And he's struggling with it. It's hard. It's addictive. Nicotine is addictive. Anybody who's ever tried to break that, they know it's hard. And there's all kinds of systems. But he's hard. But as he's doing this, one of the things I ask him, which I think affected him, how much do you spend a day on cigarettes? And it's $8 a day. Now you multiply that out. And I said, do you think that would help you on your struggles financially? You think that would help you? If you just were able to quit that. So now we're playing cards, so we know that he's trying, and he's like 4, 5, 6, 7 days into it, and he's struggling, and as he's doing that, we're playing dominoes. I need a cigarette right now. And we try to talk him out of it. His sister on the phone last night was like, don't get a cigarette. See, because he wore it on his head, he told us, I'm trying to do this. He didn't just tie it on his own hand. He put it on there and said, I need your help. And maybe he was just talking about it, but we're trying to help him. You understand? And he's going to struggle. He's going to mess up, just like we all are. But you got to start somewhere. So this week, that's going to be your assignment. It's what's one thing you can do in each of those areas to start a domino effect in those areas. So during this last song, I want you to listen to the song, participate in the song, and I want you to try to write down one thing in each of those areas you could do to knock the next domino down. And remember, it could be bigger than what you are now, but what's the one thing you can do? What's the smallest thing you can do wherever you are? Some of you are going to start way over here, and some of you are going to start at this size. Some of you are at different places, and it might be at different places on each level, on each category. What's one thing you're going to do? Father God, be with us during this last song. Speak to our hearts and help us to take this message to heart, to understand it is time to free ourselves from the chains that come from the bondage of slavery to debt and to the way that the world says to live. We need to follow your ways. So give us the courage and strength to be ready to knock that first domino down.